Yes, she murmured. I can see that. The comlink crackled, a secure channel established. Indomitable, this is Kenobi, said Obi-Wan. Do you copy?
Obi-Wan, this is Mace Windu. What's your status?
Anakin closed his eyes. For once, it was good to hear Master Windu's deep voice. We're holding on, but our grip is fast slipping, said Obi-Wan. Durd's droid army will break through our defenses very soon. Master, Taria Danson's reached us and has explained the situation. We might have an answer to Dr. Netzel's dilemma. Stand by for a biotransmission.
Standing by, said Master Windu.
Not even distance and decades of severe Jedi training could keep the suppressed excitement from his voice. Turning, Obi-Wan looked at Teeb Sufi, who was hovering behind them with an almost empty bottle of herbal muck in her hand. Thank you, Sufi. Anakin. He took the bottle from her, unsnoppered it, and with enormous care, dripped a little of the foul stuff onto the fancy comlink's bioscan plate. The comlink hummed, then beeped. Obi-Wan hit the transmit switch.
Got it, said Master Windu. Patching it through to the temple now.
Tell Dr. Netzel that whatever the active ingredients are, they've proven effective in counteracting Damatite poisoning.
Will do. Obi-Wan, I won't mince words. We're getting pounded up here. Without more ships, we won't break Grievous's blockade. I don't know if we'll get to you before Durd's droids do.
Understood, said Obi-Wan. Durd's weapon is destroyed. That's what matters.
We're not pulling out yet, Obi-Wan. So sit tight and let me speak to Master Damson.
Taking the comlink, Taria Damson cleared her throat. Master Windu?
I ordered you to lay low until we could arrange an extraction.
Yes, Master, you did.
Now I've got 3 potential Jedi hostages in play.
Master Windu, none of us will let it come to that.
Taria.
Mace, I'm sorry, she said. But did you really think I was going to turn my back on them? Anakin felt his eyebrows lift. Mace? He looked at Obi-Wan, who shrugged. His face and eyes were guarded. He knew. Oh yes, he knew that his former apprentice was displeased.
Master Windu, Master Damson added. We're all right. You focus on Grievous, and when this is over, you can shout at me in person.
Bet on it. Indomitable out.
Anakin looked again at Obi-Wan. I've got to go. I know, said Obi-Wan. Taria, give me a moment. Sufi? Frightened, Teeba Sufi swallowed.
Obi-Wan?
Where's Greti? Did you send her home?
I tried, said Teeba Sufi. She wouldn't go. She's sleeping next door.
Then I'm sorry, but can you wake her? Master Damson's hurt.
She's just a child, Obi-Wan, and she's worn out,
the Teeba protested.
She's helped you enough. I can say to your friend, young Greti needs...
Obi-Wan touched Teeba Sufi's arm. Please, it's important, and Greti would want to help.
Obi-Wan.
Master Damson tried to sit up.
Maybe...
Be quiet, Obi-Wan snapped, glaring down at her. Lie still. I'll be back in a moment. Anakin led the way outside. On the sick house step, Obi-Wan caught his arm. Anakin. He pulled away. Don't. Obi-Wan's dimly lit face was full of understanding and sorrow. Anakin. It was a long time ago. It ended a long time ago. His sleeping anger woke.
Really?
It didn't look like that to me, he thought, then said,
You love her.
She's my friend. He felt his fingers fist.
Don't you lie. Not about this. Don't you dare.
You love her. Monotonous blaster fire filled the silence between them. Then Obi-Wan nodded. Yes, Anakin, I love her. But I was never in love. For a short while, Taria and I needed each other. And when we no longer needed each other, we parted and remained friends.
So that was how it worked, was it? Stay aloof, stay detached, never let yourself feel too much, too deeply, and the Order didn't care?
So, if Padme and I pretended we weren't in love, he thought. Anakin, Obi-Wan said sharply, don't. Are you going to tell me that if you cross that line with Padme, you could cross back again? That you would ever be satisfied with only being her friend? The thought was unbearable. Never. Are you saying you're satisfied? Obi-Wan met his gaze without flinching. Yes. It was the truth. Baffled, his anger dying, Anakin folded his arms. I don't understand you, Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan almost smiled. I know. And something tells me I never will. Not when it comes to this, anyway. I have to go, he said. The fuel lines need checking, and Devi can't do it alone. I'll join you soon, said Obi-Wan. I just want to see Taria settled. A muscle leapt along his jaw. See if there's anything I can do to... The Force shivered a grim warning. She's in trouble, isn't she? She's out of remission, Obi-Wan said, his voice oddly flat. Aggressively. Anakin felt a surge of pity, not just for Master Damson, but for Obi-Wan, too. No amount of Jedi training could buffer this kind of grief. Didn't he know that from bitter personal experience? But I had Padme to soften the blow, and I was willing to let her help me. He won't let anyone help. He still thinks he has to face everything alone. Can't she go back into remission? Staring across the shadowed village square, Obi-Wan shook his head. I don't think so. Not this time. She's pushed herself too hard, too far. For you. But he couldn't say that, not with Obi-Wan's pain scorching in the Force. I'm sorry. I really am. A long silence. Then Obi-Wan released a shuddering breath. I know, he said, glancing at him. So am I. Obi-Wan, he had to say this. Taria's not the only one in trouble. I know that, too. So what do you think? Wait for the droid reinforcements to get here and roll the dice on one last big stand? I think... Obi-Wan dragged both hands down his face. I think it's a shame about Dr. Fenn and... Anakin looked down. Bantina. Flawed, misguided, and ultimately heroic. There was pain for her somewhere, but he couldn't afford to feel it. Not now. She had her chance. I'll see you at the plant.
You know, said Trin, edgy with irritation, this would go a lot faster if you three stopped hovering.
Sorry, said Bale, but we've got some anxious people who'll only believe an eyewitness account.
Trin set down his datapad. Fine, but you can witness from over there. He pointed to the other side of the lab. Seriously, Bale, you are cramping my style.
Our apologies, Dr. Netzel, said Yoda. Space to work we will give you.
Yes, sorry, Padme added. We'll get out of your way.
They shifted to the other side of the lab and watched in silence as Trin ran a series of complicated biosimulations using the data Obi-Wan had provided.
I still can't believe this, Padme muttered. How many more last-minute reprieves are we going to get?
Bale frowned. We're not reprieved yet.
Oh, I think we are, she said. I have a feeling. Don't you, Master Yoda?
Resting on his gimmer stick, Yoda sighed.
Hopeful I am, Senator. Say more than that, I will not.
Can you say if we'll get Obi-Wan and Anakin back? Bale asked. And Master Damson? Padme tensed.
Yes, we will. We have to.
Bale rested his hand on her shoulder. It was a warning, the closest he could come to telling her, be careful. You keep it secret for a reason. On the other side of the lab, Trin's scientific gadgets started beeping. Then a series of holo images appeared, complicated, multi-branched coded sequence matrices slowly rotating above each gadget's small imaging pad. Red, 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 red.
Stang, said Padme. Red's bad, isn't it?
Bale watched exhausted Trin's face fall.
Yeah, red's bad.
And then, a fifth holo image coalesced, slowly rotating. Instead of red, it was a rainbow of colors, and Trin was smiling. He was laughing. He pounded his lab bench with both fists.
"That's it," he cried. "That's the sequence. That's the missing link. And it works."
Bale crossed the lab in a few swift strides. "You're sure? Trin, are you sure?"
"I'll synthesize a sample and test it," said Trin, grinning. "But yes, I'm sure. We've got ourselves an antidote. The key was all in those three active bio-ingredients, all naturally occurring, all easily synthesized. It was just a matter of getting the balance right."
"How soon before you've got live test results?"
"Give me an hour."
And after that, it was simply a matter of high-speed bulk manufacture. But that was under control thanks to the cooperation of a Corellian medchem company with facilities in Coruscant's high-end Abroganto Scientific Research Precinct. They had an entire production complex on standby, waiting for his word. "Dr. Netzel, you are good," Bale said, shaking his head. "So, we get the antidote into production by this afternoon. Ship enough doses for every citizen on Bespin, just in case our team can't stop dirt in time. And the rest, we stockpile for insurance." He turned. "Padme." She held up her comlink, her dark eyes alight with triumph.
"I'm on hold for Brentau's Prime Minister now. Master Yoda, we've got our civilian fleet."
Master Yoda wrapped his gimmer stick on the floor.
"Then leave you to your business, I will. Make contact with the Lantee battle group, I must. Inform me you must when ready to depart your civilian fleet is."
"Of course, Master Yoda," Bale said. "I'll keep you informed every step of the way." With Yoda departed and Padme still on her comlink, he looked again at Trin. "I don't know what to say. We asked you to do it. It was impossible. And you did it." Trin dragged chemical-stained fingers through his lank, unraveled hair.
"I did some of it. But without that missing link, without your Jedi friend..."
He laughed.
"I can't believe how it worked out. That they'd end up in the one place that could give us the answer? How does that happen? It's crazy. It's impossible. It's unscientific."
And that made Bale smile. "The Force isn't science, Trin. The Force just nudges things along." Trin's eyes widened.
"The Force? Since when did you put your faith in mystical powers?"
"Since they saved my life," he said simply. "It's a long story. I'll tell you some of it when this is over."
"In that case, you'd better let me get back to work," said Trin.
But then he hesitated. "Bale, this friend of yours, this Jedi, he's not safe yet, is he?" A cold shiver of dread. "No," he said, "he's not."
"I'm sorry. Call me when you've got your live test results, and I'll start the ball rolling on the next step."
"Bale," said Padme, calling across the lab, "Brental's confirmed. We need to coordinate with everyone else, then set up a holo conference for the fleet's captains and commanders. Let's go."
Bale gave Trin a crushing hug, startling them both.
"The Republic's in your debt, Trin," he said, stepping back. "I'm in your debt. Whatever you want, ask it, and it's yours."
Trin let his gaze flick to Padme, waiting impatiently at the laboratory door.
"I wouldn't mind a candlelit dinner with your other friend over there."
"I'm sorry," he said, "but I think she's spoken for." He grinned. "How about a candlelit dinner with me?" Trin kicked them both out so he could get back to work.
"This is important, Bale. This means something. I can feel it," said Padme as he flew them back to her apartment. "Despite the difficulties and in the face of real danger, the people of the Republic have come together. Not for profits, not for power or prestige or anything ordinary, but because it's the right thing to do. Because it's a chance to spit evil in the eye."
He loved her confidence, her unrelenting dedication to any cause she took up. But as he slid his speeder out of the main traffic flow and into the priority lane that was the fastest way to her apartment, he glanced at her and saw the churning fear in her eyes. "We'll get them back, Padme," he said, and took her hand in his. "We're not leaving them on Lantib."
"I know," she said. "I know. Our boys are coming home.
She looked strong. She sounded strong. But her fingers in his were cold, and holding him so tightly he was hard-pressed not to wince. He flew the rest of the way one-handed, and tried hard not to think about all the ways the Lanteeb rescue could go wrong. After nearly 4 hours of unrelenting effort, finally, Obi-Wan had to accept he'd done as much as he could for Taria, at least for the time being. The droids and ammunition she'd warned them of had arrived a short while ago, but despite the renewed, ferocious bombardment, she slept. Still, each exhaled breath was edged with a rasping hint of pain. Beneath her tranquil face, there was pain. From now on, because she was so brave and so stubborn, pain would dominate every remaining day of her life. "All right," he said, and tugged the light blanket over her shoulder. "That's enough for now."
"But she's not better," said Gretty,
drooping on a stool beside him. The child was exhausted. He'd had no right to ask again for her help, but it was Taria, and they needed her in this fight. "She's better than she was," he said.
"Thanks to you, Gretty. The strength you lent me made the difference. Now you should get some rest, too."
"Teeb Kenobi's right," said Sufi,
drying her hands at the sink.
"It's more than enough you've done, child."
Obi-Wan glanced at her. She was still furious with him for waking Gretty, for asking the girl to pit herself against Taria's disease. He nudged Gretty with his knee. "You should listen to Teeba Sufi."
"But..."
"Gretty." With a huffing sigh, Gretty gave in.
"You both need rest," said Sufi,
picking her way through her other patients to join him.
"Go next door and sleep, Teeb. I'll wake you if your friend stirs."
Stifling his own pain, Obi-Wan stood. "I can't. I'm long overdue at the plant. Please, make sure that Gretty either goes home or sleeps here." She didn't bother trying to argue with him.
"Do what you like, you will."
"Obi-Wan."
Surprised, he turned. "Rickard." Torbell's head miner shoved his blanket aside, sat up, and swung his feet to the floor.
"If you're going to the plant, then I'm going with you."
"You're not," said Sufi. "You're..."
Rickard stood unsteady but resolute.
"I am."
Obi-Wan looked at him. Days of illness had left the miner haggard, but he wasn't dying. "All right."
"Teeb Kenobi!"
"Sufi," Obi-Wan said, hand raised. "We've decisions to make. Rickard's your speaker. It's his right to be there."
"If it's a speaker you need, fetch Jacqueline. She can..."
"We both know Jacqueline's not well," he said. "Please, we must go." He tapped his fingers on Gretty's hair. "And you, mind Teeba Sufi." Rickard paused to kiss his sleeping son's forehead. Then they left the sick house. Dawn was breaking. Beyond the plasma shield, the new light bounced and sparkled on the mass of battle droids, ceaselessly firing at the shield. Rickard stared at them.
"Your sick friend, Teeb. Is she the only help that's coming?"
There was no point pretending. "Perhaps. I hope not."
"Two of us, that makes," Rickard muttered.
If there was news, Master Windu would have calmed. They'd spoken once more since their first calm, status unchanged. It wasn't what he'd wanted to hear. "Come on," Obi-Wan said, thrusting doubt aside. "Anakin's waiting." 15 minutes later, they stood with Anakin and Devi in the power plant substation, surveying Torbell's depleted supply of liquid damatite.
"That's it?" said Rickard, shocked. "That's all we've got left? But that's a good month's supply gone in days."
"There wasn't a choice, Rickard," said Devi. "Keeping the shield running and strong, that's thirsty work. Especially for our old plant."
"I know," said Rickard, sighing. "I'm not blaming you, Dev."
Obi-Wan exchanged glances with Anakin.
"Blame us," he said. "We brought this on you."
"I'd like to, believe me," said Rickard, glowering. "But then I look at my son, and I think of that filthy damatite weapon."
He shook his head.
"What good does blame do anyway? Won't save lives, will it? But with all those new droids out there,
Don't worry about them, said Anakin. I can reconfigure the shields again. Ricard looked at him.
And run through what's left of our fuel in twice the time?
Sorry, that's the trade-off. Ricard rasped a hand over his stubbled chin.
And if you agree, you buy us how long? A day?
Maybe two, said Anakin. It should be enough if the reinforcements arrive for our battle group, if they can break through Grievous's blockade and...
If, said Ricard scornful. It's all hope and guesswork, isn't it? For all you know, the Republic's ready to cut its losses. Admit it, boy. We're facing death.
That might be true, Ricard, Obi-Wan said quietly. But this much I can promise. It won't be because the Republic deserted us.
Ricard.
Unsteady in her broken-down anti-grav harness, Devi took hold of his arm.
We've trusted them this far.
Aged years by his illness, beaten down with pain and grief, Ricard nodded and turned away.
Do what you like. It makes no difference.
Ricard.
Devi bit her lip, watching him stamp out of the fuel store.
I'll go after him, Anakin. Reconfigure the shields. Obi-Wan, you'll need to recheck every feed valve in bays 3 through 12. I'll come help you when I can.
Alone again, Obi-Wan looked at Anakin. You're sure about this? What you're planning, the shield generators can stand it? The power plant can stand it? Anakin grimaced. Not for long, they can't. But maybe for long enough, if we're lucky. And I know you don't believe in luck. He shrugged. But I say it can't hurt to cross our fingers just this once. With a small, tired smile, he nodded. Just this once. Anakin was looking haggard, too, after another long night without sleep. How's Master Damson? She's sleeping. Obi-Wan, sympathy, however well meant, would undo him. Come on, he said. We've got work to do. By the time the sun was halfway to noon, the shields were reconfigured, the power plant's decrepit feed valves had been cleaned of accumulated impurities, and six sections of shorting circuitry were replaced. With everything done that could be done, for the moment, the four of them met up in the monitoring station.
And that's it? Said Ricard.
He looked ready to drop.
What about the Republic? Teeb Kenobi?
They'll calm when things change, Obi-Wan said. It would be a mistake to chivy them. In the meantime, we do what we can.
I've been thinking about that, said Anakin. If the shield fails before help reaches us, we'll be fighting hand to hand. Thanks to those droids, we've got some blasters, we've got vibro-picks and other mining tools, and we've got what we need to improvise grenades.
Feeling sick, Obi-Wan closed his eyes.
These are villagers, not soldiers. It'll be a slaughter, he thought.
Then he nodded. Agreed.
You want us to fight? Said Ricard. Teebs, we'll fight. But there's not a man or woman here who's ever fired a blaster.
Or made a grenade, added Devi.
Don't worry, said Anakin. We'll show you how. Ricard rubbed the ropey scars on his head.
You'll have to.
But you both must rest first, said Devi. You've bought us a little time, Teebs. Now use it wisely.
Obi-Wan looked at Anakin. She's right. We can afford an hour.
You can afford two, Devi snapped. Better yet, three. You're as much a resource to Tor-Bel as our liquid damatite. Don't squander yourselves. We can't afford it.
You heard the Teeper, said Ricard. 3 hours. We can mine the power plant and the shield without you that long. Now go. That's my ruling as village speaker.
Too tired to argue, they went. Taria woke to Obi-Wan's pain as he tried yet again to heal her.
Obi-Wan, stop,
she whispered.
You're not helping me, and you're only hurting yourself.
He shook his head.
No, I can do this. I just need to... I haven't quite got the knack of... His fist hit the side of her cot. I'm not trained. That's the problem. But I can...
Obi-Wan!
She caught his wrist.
I said no. I don't want you to do this.
Filthy and unkempt, he stared at her. Taria, I can't sit here and do nothing.
Of course you can,
she said gently, because there's nothing you can do. As the boom and blat of blaster fire rattled the sick house's window and its open doors, Taria looked around the room. Anakin was asleep in a nearby cot, Sufi was outside in the street, and there was no sign of the little girl Greti. With her fellow patients lulled to silence by herbs and sickness, she and Obi-Wan were as good as alone. You shouldn't have come, he said, staring at his hands. She released his wrist.
Don't talk nonsense. That bioweapon had to be destroyed.
You shouldn't have come here, he snapped. You're a fool.
I know,
she said, and pressed her palm to his cheek.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you.
Jerkily, he pushed himself off his stool. No, don't mind me, Taria. I'm just tired. Tired? She couldn't think of a word to describe what he was. Empty, perhaps? Having poured so much of himself into healing these people, into keeping them alive. Yes, he was empty.
Or he was.
But now here I am, filling him with grief.
Obi-Wan.
He kept his back to her. He was so thin. He and Anakin were worn down to skin and bones, living on the Force.
And he calls me crazy.
Obi-Wan, she said again. Please. Slowly, he turned. His face was naked, every guarded feeling laid bare. If they'd been in love once, it was only for a moment. In the breathless, fresh excitement of discovery, in that first annihilating shock of pleasure. But it had passed, which was a good thing, and in passing, had transmuted to something deep and sure and true.
Obi-Wan, you have to listen to me,
she said.
Really listen, and believe every word.
Step by step, he came back to her and sat down again.
I've been a dead woman walking ever since Pamina Prime,
she said, keeping her voice low, willing him to hear her and believe.
We both know that, so it wasn't ever about living longer, but what I got to do with the life that was left to me. What I'm doing here?
She waved her hand, feeling the bite in bone and muscle.
Stopping dirt, helping to save you and Sky Guy and this village? It's important, so even if it hastens what must come to pass... Obi-Wan, how can I not rejoice? And how can you love me, yet not rejoice for me?
He shrugged. I'm selfish, Taria. I don't want to lose you. Though it woke the sharpest hurt in her, she sat up.
I made my peace with this dying business long ago. Don't poison what little time we have left.
For a moment, she watched him struggle with that. Then she leaned forward and cradled his face between her hands.
I'm going to tell you this now because I might not get a chance later, she whispered. They call Anakin the Chosen One, but you have a destiny too. You have a long road to walk, and it won't always be easy. I wish I could walk it with you, but that's not meant to be. So you remember what I'm telling you, Obi-Wan. Everything happens for a reason. Everything. The good, the bad, the indifferent. They all have a purpose. Never forget who you are. Never forget what you serve. And no matter what happens, keep your face turned to the light.
She watched her words sink through his skin and beneath the surface of his luminous eyes. She watched the grief rise in him and the rage and the despair. She watched his courage drown all of them. She watched him... let go. Beside them, Anakin stirred awake as Teba Sufi bustled back into the sick house. Taria dropped her hands to her lap. She smiled.
All right?
What's all right? Said Anakin, groggy. What's going on? Nothing yet, said Obi-Wan, and slapped him on the back. On your feet, Anakin. We've slept long enough. Chapter 21. Staring from Admiral Yularen to Master Windu and back again, Ahsoka felt every predator instinct stir.
Oh no, this isn't good.
Master Windu, said the Admiral, his voice clipped. While I appreciate the difficulty of your position, I must think of my troops. You know as well as I that the acceleration of clone production has not succeeded as Fleet anticipated. Given the slowdown of numbers leaving the Kaminoan facility, I cannot agree to prolonging this mission. Hammer and Arrow squadrons have lost almost one quarter of their pilots each, and Gold Squadron isn't far behind. It's time to return home. Ahsoka, standing far to one side and forgotten, sucked in a sharp breath. She could feel Master Windu's coldness in the Force, and his ruthless self-mastery as he controlled it. More than anything, she wanted to shout, "Stop it! The enemy's out there, not here in Battle Ops!" But she couldn't say a word. She was a Padawan, a nobody compared with these men. If Sky Guy was here, he'd say something. He'd speak up. And the problem was, she was pretty sure what he'd say. Admiral Yularen's right. I don't want anyone dying for me. And if she heard him say that, well, then she'd be the one arguing.
I'm with Master Windu. We can't leave them behind.
Then came a great shudder in the Force as Master Windu released all emotion.
Admiral, help is coming. We only need a little longer. If we play Felix and Rodas with Grievous, if we abandon this position and instead spread out the battle group, give him four scattered targets instead of...
No, said the Admiral. Master Windu, I'm sorry, but I ask you not to do that. For the sake of your crew, for the sake of...
Admiral?
It was Lieutenant Avery on comm.
I have a priority alpha signal coming through from the Jedi Temple. It's Master Yoda. He's asking for you.
Admiral Yularen hit the comm switch.
Patch it through, Lieutenant.
Master Yoda wanted the Admiral?
Ahsoka, caught staring, felt herself blush as Master Windu fixed her with a cold look.
Well, Padawan, what do you think?
She lifted her chin.
Master, I think we don't leave them behind unless we have to. And I don't think we have to. Not yet.
He nodded, his eyes suddenly warm.
Good answer.
And then, Master Yoda's voice, slightly distorted by distance, came through the comm.
Agreement we have reached with an auxiliary civilian fleet, Admiral. On its way to you now it is. Agreed to accept your temporary authority, the ship's captains have. Remain at Lanteeb, can you, until arrive they do?
Admiral Yularen clasped his hands behind his back.
Master Yoda, our position is precarious. We've already sustained significant casualties. Grievous is holding fire for the moment, but that could change and we do not have the means to overcome him.
Have it you will soon, Admiral.
How soon, Master Yoda?
Within hours.
Master Yoda, what is the Supreme Chancellor's position on this?
Asked us, as Supreme Chancellor Palpatine, to rescue the trapped Jedi.
A long silence, then Yularen nodded.
Very well, Master Yoda. We'll wait until this fleet arrives.
My thanks you have, Admiral. Good hunting.
Master Windu turned. Padawan Tano, go below decks. Inform the 501st that they'll be seeing action in the next few hours. Once the skies are clear, ground troops will be going in.
Yes, Master Windu, she said, and came close to running out of the room.
The minute Rex saw her face, he held up a fist and silenced the entire mess, where everyone from the 501st, ground troops and pilots alike, were gathered to remember the dead and wait for action. The weight of the clones' stares was a fearsome thing.
We're going in, she said to the room at large. As soon as our reinforcements arrive, we're going to smash through that blockade to save Master Skywalker and Master Kenobi, and Master Damson, too.
The 501st let out a cheer. In the noisy aftermath, Rex came to stand with her.
You all right, little'un?
It wasn't until he asked her that she realized how not right she was. Stuck up here above Lanteeb, away from Anakin, knowing how much trouble he was in, catching only fleeting snatches of him in the Force, not being able to fight by his side. Dreading that with every minute they'd get word of his death, or even worse, that she'd feel it.
I'm fine, she told Rex, daring him to contradict her. Just looking forward to getting my boots on the ground, you know?
His eyes told her he could see the truth, but he smiled.
I know, Ahsoka. Never mind. It won't be long. and then we'll be downstairs kicking some tinny clanker butt and dragging our favorite Jedi to safety by the scruff of his neck. She grinned.
I'll tell him you said that, Rex.
Little un, he retorted. I'm counting on it.
Teeba, I don't think you should be doing this, said Sufi. I don't think Teeb Kenobi would approve.
Feeling the sluggish flow of her blood, Taria unfolded from her stretch.
Sufi, I know he wouldn't. So isn't it a good thing I don't answer to him?
He'll be cross,
said the little girl, Gretty, whose startling presence in the Force shouted to be noticed.
Prickly he is when he's cross.
Prickly, Taria grinned.
He can prickle at me all he likes. Won't make a blind bit of difference.
Teeba Sufi and the child exchanged looks.
Truly, she added, and slipped the activated comlink into her bodysuit's thigh pocket. There's no need to fret. I've known Obi-Wan my whole life, almost. If he's cross with me, well, it won't be the first time.
Gretty looked ready to argue. Then she changed her mind, and instead turned suddenly shy.
Teeba?
Taria dropped to a crouch before her.
Yes, Gretty. Your hair, said the girl. It's pretty, it is.
Xenophobic, Senator Organa had called the people of Lanteeb, rigidly prejudiced against anyone different.
I expect it takes a little getting used to, doesn't it?
Taria said softly, and with a glance included Teeba Sufi.
I don't suppose you've ever seen hair this color before.
Teeba Sufi's face was stiff.
No.
It's just hair. Underneath it, I'm the same as you.
No, you're not,
said Gretty, shaking her head.
Underneath it, you're a Jedi.
There was a deep, aching regret in the child's voice. Looking at her, Taria realized Gretty understood she was trapped here. For a moment, she was furious with Obi-Wan for waking the girl's potential when he knew he'd have to leave her behind. And then she sighed.
He did what he had to. I can't blame him for that.
Standing, she looked at Sufi. I have to go. Stay inside, no matter what you hear. Don't leave this sick house. Not unless there's an order. Sufi reached for the child and pulled her close.
We won't. What about Boley?
Gretty protested.
Hamam, said Sufi. I'll send for her, Gretty. Let the Teeba be about her business now.
With a smile and a touch to Gretty's cheek, Taria left them. Outside, the square was alive with some 30 of the healthiest villagers learning the rudiments of blaster firing and how to throw what looked like homemade grenades. Their courage was admirable and heartbreaking. They didn't stand a chance against that horde of droids on the other side of the shield. She watched for a while as Obi-Wan and Anakin moved from group to group, trying to impart years of training and months of frontline experience in minutes. A fool's errand, some would call it. But what else could they do? Tell everyone to sit on the ground and wait for the droids to break through the shield and kill them like nerfs? No, and neither can I. Seeing her approach, Obi-Wan broke off his demonstration and walked to meet her.
Taria!
She raised an eyebrow at him.
You're surprised? Really?
No, he said, and pinched the bridge of his nose.
I see you've been busy making bombs.
Among other things, he said wearily, we're as armed as we can be, but not as trained. Where'd you want me? Heroically, he restrained himself. Over there, he said, pointing. That group's still waiting for basic blaster instruction.
Excellent,
she said, and got to work. An hour later, they stopped to rest. After answering a spate of last-minute questions, Taria left the villages to pester Obi-Wan. Refusing to admit her pain and fatigue, she joined Anakin in the middle of the road leading out of Torbel, where he stood contemplating the droid army. The shield buzzed and flickered with every blaster bolt impact.
Here, said Anakin, handing her his quarter-filled cup of water. And don't argue.
Amused, grateful, she sipped and stared at the droids.
Have they stopped firing at all yet today?
Only to reload, he said, morose. He'd seen her comforting Obi-Wan at the shield the night she arrived. For some reason, their closeness had angered him. And that had distressed Obi-Wan.
She had no intention of causing strife between them.
Anakin, I need to ask you a favor.
He glanced at her. What?
Promise me you'll always have Obi-Wan's back and be there for him when I die.
After a long silence, he nodded.
All right.
She swallowed the last mouthful of water.
He'd die for you. You do know that.
Another nod.
I know.
His tone was faintly hostile, as though she'd broken some unspoken rule. And maybe she had. She smiled.
Just checking.
When she didn't say anything else, he raised an eyebrow. What? You're not going to ask if I'd die for him? And that made her laugh.
Just how stupid do you think I am?
He was still trying to decide exactly what she meant by that when Obi-Wan joined them and nodded at the ranks of droids beyond the shield. Have you noticed what's skulking at the back of that line? Of course, said Anakin. Super battle droids. The Seps must have emptied the city of droids by now, said Obi-Wan. It's only a matter of time before they ramp up their bombardment.
Anakin, are we ready for it?
Anakin shrugged. As ready as we'll ever be. I can't make the shield any stronger, not without overloading the generators of the power plant. And you're sure we can't spare any more liquid damatite? We could use some extra grenades. From the look on Anakin's face, it wasn't the first time Obi-Wan had asked the question. Not if you want to keep the shield running, no.
Liquid damatite? Said Taria, surprised. That's your fuel source? Isn't it a bit...
volatile? Anakin managed a tight smile. Yes. Good, isn't it? If the shields fail, we should be able to reduce quite a few droids to scrap metal with our homemade grenades. He was trying to make light of the notion, but it frightened him, she could tell. As well it should. The homemade grenades were jars and bottles and tins filled with fuel, the detonators a strip of cloth soaked in lamp oil. As bombs went, they were simple, brutal, and most likely ineffective. The risk to the villagers was enormous.
But this is war, she thought, and in war there is no safe.
She looked at Obi-Wan.
Well, perhaps there's something else we can...
And then her comlink sounded. Retrieving it from her bodysuit pocket, she thumbed it to transmit.
Danson.
This is Mace Windu. We've got reinforcements and we're engaging Grievous full strength, attempting to breach the blockade and get ground troops to your location. We should...
A high-pitched electronic squeal drowned his voice, and then the comlink went dead.
Ah, said Obi-Wan.
I think Grievous has worked out how to jam our comms again.
How inconsiderate.
Yeah, that's probably why I don't like him, said Anakin.
He's got no manners.
Watching them smile at each other, Taria felt their kinship and the complicated love. They were such an odd pairing on the face of it. Obi-Wan so self-contained, Anakin so reckless. But they'd found their balance, and now they were two halves of a whole. Anakin had been the making of Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan had shown Anakin what it meant to be a good man.
I'm glad. I'm so glad that I got to see it.
Obi-Wan! Obi-Wan!
Turning, Taria saw a scarred, middle-aged man hurrying down the road toward them.
Rikard, said Obi-Wan under his breath. He's the head miner and the village speaker.
Obi-Wan!
Said Rikard, reaching them. Out of breath, close to limping, sweat slicked his stubbled face.
Folk want to know what to do next. I thought maybe the strongest men could start blocking the streets with ground cars, like you suggested.
Yes, Rikard, good idea, said Obi-Wan. And everyone else should stay calm. Have you put the evacuation plan in place?
Some not too happy about it, said Rikard, scowling. But yes, it's all set.
Rikard, Obi-Wan grasped the man's bony shoulder. I thought we'd agreed the mine would be the safest place for people to hide. We know you're worried about the raw damatite,
Anakin added.
There aren't enough protective suits, you've run out of herbal pills, and people are already weakened from the toxic smoke. But Rikard, you have to trust us.
All of that is nothing compared with a full droid assault.
Which we won't have to face if your shield jiggery holds, said Rikard, still scowling. Will we?
Anakin folded his arms.
It'll hold. The mine is a fallback, that's all. But when we give the signal, if we give the signal,
Then you have to send everyone but the commando teams down there. No exceptions. Understood?
Understood, Ricard muttered.
Taria watched his limping retreat for a moment, then looked at Obi-Wan and Anakin.
Commando teams?
A little morale booster, said Obi-Wan, shrugging. An exaggeration, perhaps, but if it helps... He had a point.
You didn't tell him about Windu's ground assault.
I didn't want to get his hopes up. Let it be a nice surprise.
Yes, indeed. Let it be a nice surprise for all of us.
Anakin tipped his head back to look through the plasma shield ceiling and into the blue sky beyond.
I can't tell what's happening up there. Can you?
No, said Obi-Wan. Taria? She shook her head.
Sorry.
They were all too tired to sense so far. She just hoped they weren't too tired to fight.
Obi-Wan, I'm going to get my generator team together, said Anakin. Make sure they're clear on what warning signs they need to look for. You're all right?
Of course, said Obi-Wan, faintly smiling. You?
Never better, said Anakin, and pulled him into a swift, hard embrace.
Take care.
He's so terribly demonstrative, Obi-Wan complained, watching Anakin half-walk, half-jog toward the power plant.
Has been from the first, and nothing I say seems to break him of the habit.
Taria smothered a smile.
Yes, it's very un-Jedi of him. What a crushing disappointment he must be to you.
Obi-Wan gave her a look.
Tell me, what will it take to get you down the mine?
A kidnapping.
Ha! He shook his head. Don't tempt me.
I mean it, Obi-Wan, she said, her smile fading. We both know you need another lightsaber in this fight.
What I need is not to... They both felt it. A shock of warning through the Force. A moment later, the spindly battle droids lowered their blasters and parted ranks. And the hulking super battle droids advanced, their arms extended, the mouths of their inbuilt laser cannons glowing crimson. A heartbeat of silence, and then they opened fire. Bam! 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 The heavy-duty laser bolts slammed against the shield. The plasma shivered and shimmered, turning blood red on impact, the color fading too slowly. Under the noise of the escalated bombardment, they heard a high-pitched mechanical whine. Obi-Wan turned. That's Generator 6. We'd better look at it in case Anakin can't get there in time. Another hollow boom! Another shiver through the shield. And then, as though Dird's army had only been clearing its throat until now, every battle droid and swarming mosquito opened fire with the SBDs, and the afternoon's daylight turned scarlet.
Well, said Taria, I guess they finally got the message the Republic means business.
Obi-Wan nodded. I guess they did. He grabbed her hand, and they ran. At some point, Anakin stopped hearing the noise of the attack. He could feel the blaster concussions against his skin. Feel them violently humming through his muscles and bones and his prosthetic arm and hand. But he ignored them. He had more important things to worry about. How long since the SBDs had opened fire? 2 hours? Three? He had no idea. He'd lost track of time. As far as he knew, Obi-Wan was still at the power plant with Devi, making sure the creaky machinery didn't fall apart. Taria was working the fuel supply line, keeping the liquid damatite coming, keeping the power plant and the shield alive. And he was running the shield's groaning perimeter, around and around and around each generator without stopping, because the moment the shield failed, the village was dead. Sure, he had a handful of helpers, Tarnik and Gein and their friends, doing what they could to keep the generators going, but they were ordinary men and women. Machines didn't speak to them, didn't whisper in their blood. He'd forgotten what it felt like to breathe without pain, run without pain, use the Force without pain. His whole world was pain, and he couldn't imagine a world without it. The rest of Torbell's people were gathered on the square under Ricard's stern eye. The commando teams, with their few blasters and their dangerous homemade grenades, and their vibropicks and axes and crowbars and rigged-up blasting caps, huddled together and waited for the worst to happen, for the shield to fail and the droids to advance. Everyone else, the mothers, the fathers, and the children, waited for the order to flee underground. Sufi's patients were loaded onto stretchers and anti-grav sleds, ready for a swift evacuation. Their fear was oppressive. Fighting it, Anakin gritted his teeth. We've done everything we can for them. We couldn't have done more. As he reached Generator 8 for the 15th time, or the 20th, who knew anymore, he saw a villager on her knees with its housing sprung free, frantically pulling out its wiry entrails. There were sparks and spits of smoke, and the bleeding edge of the shield was starting to melt. Get out of the way, he said, and half-dragged, half-force-pushed the woman aside. Plunging his hands into the generator's innards, he let that strange instinct guide him, let it show his fingers where to go, what to heal. And then the villager, Chiba, that was her name, screamed and pointed, and he looked and saw the same melting along the edges of sections 10 and 12. Oh, Stang, this is it. Chiba! He shouted so she'd hear him over the endless booming blasts.
Run to the power plant and tell Obi-Wan the shield's failing. And then tell Ricard it's time to get down the mine as deep as you can go.
Chiba was young and terrified.
But go!
He howled and used the force to make his point. Chiba ran. Dizzy, he could hear the escalating sound of wrongness in the shield, in the generators. He took a deep breath, banished all thought and fear of what this was going to cost him, and plunged himself into the force to buy them more time. As he finished unblocking yet another fuel line, Obi-Wan heard Devi screaming his name. He slammed the levers back into position and ran to the monitoring station.
Chiba was here, said Devi, sweat pouring down her face. Anakin says the shield's failing.
He shoved his way outside. The noise of the bombardment was overwhelming, beating and battering and echoing in his skull. The sky was blood red with plasma fire, and the shield, well, it was holding, but he could see an ominous sparking across its surface and suspicious ripples in the plasma. They had minutes, that was all. Villagers were streaming toward the mine entrance, the oldest and the infirm being carried on stretchers or pushed on anti-grav sleds. No ground cars. They'd all been driven into the streets and flipped onto their sides. Obstacles for the droids, hopefully, and maybe some shelter for the village commandos. Pitiful, to be sure, but it was better than nothing. He ran back into the power plant.
All right, Devi, that's it. Put the plant on auto run and get yourself down the mine.
She shook her head, weeping.
No, Obi-Wan, I'm staying. I can't leave you to face them alone.
Devi, he said and grabbed hold of her shoulders. No. You said when the time came you'd go. You promised.
I know. But I can't, she sobbed. How can I run away? What kind of person does that make me?
A person who keeps her word, he said, and hugged her. Please, Devi. Ricard will need you. Still weeping, she switched the plant's machinery to auto-run, then turned back to him, ready to argue some more. Mindful of her broken-down anti-grav harness, he summoned a smile and gave her a little push. Go on. I'll be fine. Her plain face, tear-streaked and tight with grief, she shook her head.
Liar,
she said, and left. He took a moment, just a moment, to listen to the power plant. It was rough, but it was running. It was the most he could hope for. Leaving it to run or die, he went in search of Taria. Taria slotted the last four fuel containers into their feed lines and opened the spigots. When she was sure the fresh fuel was flowing unhindered, she took a moment to ease her aching back and stepped outside the stinking, fume-laden fuel house to snatch some fresh air before going in search of Obi-Wan. As she took her first breath, the Force slapped her with a stunning sense of danger. She looked up and saw the shield overhead sparking and sputtering and oddly crawling as though the plasma were alive and trying to shed its own skin. Oh, I've got a bad feeling about this. And then she registered the stream of villagers heading for the mine. Someone had signaled the evacuation. Good.
But there was nobody to rally the village commandos. They were milling in the street, looking uncertain and confused. She ran for them.
All right, settle down, she shouted. Into your teams, people. No talking. Come on.
It was like herding Padawans before a tournament in the large dojo.
There you go, Ahsoka. I knew our little competition would come in handy.
When the villagers were split into their 10 teams of 3, silent and staring at her, she gave them her best no-nonsense Jedi stare.
I know you're frightened, but I also know you can do this, she said, raising her voice above the droid's constant bombardment. This is your home you're defending. It's your friends, and your mothers, and your husbands, and your children. So everyone take a deep breath, get focused, and we'll run through the drills one more time.
Trying so hard to control their fear, Torbell's commandos stumbled through the range of offensive drills they'd been taught. When they were done, she smiled at them.
Excellent work, people. You'll do fine, I know you will. Just remember, keep your heads. Don't get carried away and waste a bomb or a shot on a single droid. Not unless you absolutely have to. Aim for them in groups. You'll take out more of them that way. Don't use your vibro weapons until you're sure your target's down and disarmed. And do remember to pick up their blasters if you can. Throw them out of reach if you're not able to use them yourselves. And... Taria!
Holding up her hand, she turned. It was Obi-Wan coming toward her at a shuffling run. One look at his face, and she knew.
This is it.
Turning back to the men and women who'd volunteered to be the front line against Durd's droid army, she nodded.
It's time. Gear up, people, then take your positions. And may the Force be with you.
Solemnly silent, the villagers loaded themselves with their assorted weaponry and headed out. Blinking back tears, Taria watched them go. But when Obi-Wan reached her, she spun around and showed him nothing but a smile.
Master Kenobi, guess what? I think we're about to host a little war.
She skimmed a hand down her grimy black bodysuit.
Is this suitable for the occasion, or should I find myself a dress?
Speechless, he looked at her and then began to laugh.
Come on,
she said, taking his arm.
Let's go kick some clanker butt.
In the end, it was Generator 4 that brought the shield crashing down. Anakin felt the collapse before it happened, felt the spark and flame of its heart as it died. And because of the way he'd reconfigured the shield matrix, because he couldn't do it any other way, it took every other generator down with it. Incredibly, as the shield began to collapse, the droid army ceased firing, as if it couldn't believe what was happening right in front of it. As if this were some devious Jedi trick. I wish. The droid's immobility gave him time to drag out his lightsaber and ignite it. Time to reach painfully into the Force and feel for Obi-Wan and Taria.
And there they were,
not far from the ruined refinery. Then he felt them separate, taking up their positions. He watched the shield fade, feeling strangely calm. The sky was empty. Mace Windu's attempt to reach them in time had failed. A single thought, one last regret.
I'm sorry, Padme. Please forgive me.
And then, Durd's army opened fire.
Hold on, little un.
Rex bellowed, his voice tinny through his helmet's vocoder.
Because we're coming in hotter than hot.
Hotter than hot didn't begin to describe it. Their gunship was screaming toward Anakin's location so fast, Ahsoka expected the air to ignite. She was still getting used to the idea she wasn't dead. She couldn't believe they'd finally broken Grievous's blockade. But they had. Facing dreadnoughts and battleships and armored freighters and star pounders and 11 squadrons of fighters and 4 of the best GAR cruisers, the cowardly Barv had lost his nerve. He'd turned tail and run, the move so surprising, he'd made it to hyperspace before they could stop him. Admiral Yularen had turned the bridge's air bright blue, swearing. And then, he'd set his sights on Lanteeb. Leaving Yularen and his enhanced battle group to take care of liberating the planet, she and Master Windu were taking the 501st and the 95th to Tor-Bel.
to save Anakin and Master Kenobi and Taria from the droids.
Please, please don't let us be too late.
Smoke! Shouted their pilot, pointing. That's Tor-Bel up ahead!
Smoke?
Precarious, Ahsoka leaned out of the open side of the Lardy and saw Master Windu do the same thing on his gunship flying beside them. The ground was whipping fast beneath them, the air cold and whistling.
Hurry, hurry. Go faster, Jinx. Come on.
They flew up and over a range of low hills, and there was the village, crawling with droids and engulfed in flames. She saw a scattered handful of people running, panicked, saw the droids mow them down and keep on marching. Desperate, she reached for Anakin and the Force, but all she could feel was chaos and terror. With a roaring of engines, the hunting pack of 30 gunships screamed into Tor-Bel. Some of the droids turned and started firing. The 501st and the 95th laughed and began firing back. And then, the Lardies were dirtside, white armored clones spilling onto hard ground. And the clanking tinnies never knew what hit them. Ahsoka force leapt from her gunship, lightsaber sizzling. She sensed Rex and Sergeant Korok and Checkers wading into the fight.
May the Force be with you, boys. Don't you dare get killed.
Dimly, she felt Master Windu engage the enemy, slicing and force-pushing droids to scrap. He didn't need her. She bolted into the fray. Three fast strides, and she was one with the Force. She breathed it. It breathed her. She danced in its storm. Droids fell before her, but she was untouched. The air was rank with smoke and blood. More people had died here.
Not Anakin, please.
And then she saw the bodies, but he wasn't among them. She had to stay focused. She'd have felt it if he'd died. And she'd feel it if Master Kenobi died, surely. Some of the slaughtered were women, but none had blue-green hair. She could see that much as she leapt and somersaulted and slashed droids to pieces.
Anakin, I'm here. Anakin, where are you?
But she couldn't sense him. She started to despair and then heard his voice in her memory, deep and measured.
Don't be afraid, Ahsoka. Fear just gets in the way.
So instead of straining to find him, she gave herself to the moment and let the Force move her as it willed. Her lightsaber flashed and dazzled and swung, faster and faster, though she felt quite slow and calm, as though this were a dojo and she couldn't actually die. Every droid that challenged her fell to her blade. She was aware of Master Windu fighting. She could feel the clones of the 501st and the 95th as they hunted the length and breadth of the small burning village. The droids she couldn't feel, but through the stinking, gusting smoke, she could see the clone troops cutting them to pieces. And she felt herself drift past abandoned ground cars and gutted buildings, down ferrocrete alleys and across open ground, leaping through heat and flames, slicing apart any tinny stupid enough to get in her way. The droids were vastly outnumbered now. They were walking scrap metal. She realized it had been a while since she'd come across a dead body.
Shouldn't there be more villagers? Where did they go?
And then she forgot about the people, because there he was, beside a ruined shield generator.
Anakin.
Bloody, sweaty, and still alive. He was fighting back-to-back with Master Kenobi and Taria, and stamped in their faces was a grim, desperate determination and a shared extremity of pain. A ring of droids surrounded them, moving in for the kill. Ahsoka felt her lips peel back in a snarl.
I don't think so, you clanking barbs. Not today, not ever.
Then came a rush in the Force, and Master Windu was beside her. She glanced at him, and he glanced at her, and that was all they needed. They knew what to do. The look on Anakin's face when he saw her was the only reward she'd ever need. Epilogue. Just over an hour later, Ahsoka stood in a small patch of silence on Tor-Bel's charred village square as Master Windu coordinated the various mopping-up phases of the mission. Since Lantiba City's seps had surrendered almost immediately, the most complicated task was arranging for a total evacuation of Tor-Bel's surviving villagers, all 300-and-something of them, because the place had been reduced to a smoking ruin. The sun was going down fast, so Rex had arranged the gunships to be positioned around the square. Their floodlights turned the dusk to noon. It was a typically efficient and thoughtful Rex action, and it made her love him more than ever. Now he and the rest of the troops, and while some were wounded, none had died, were methodically going through what remained of the village, collecting undamaged personal items and communal equipment and stacking it neatly in one of the streets bordering the square. Sad to say, there wasn't much. Lined up in the road on the other side of the square were 28 body bags. Sergeant Corrick and Checkers had been in charge of that sad duty. The dead were being kept company by some of the weeping villagers who'd emerged from Torbell's mine when the fighting was over. Their grief filled the force. Anakin, Master Kenobi, and Taria sat together in the square's designated triage area. They weren't alone. About 40 villagers had been separated from the others and were being given emergency medical treatment, too. The twilight air was full of smoke and the soft sounds of suffering. One woman, Master Kenobi called her Sufi, insisted on shadowing the clone medics and double-checking every pill and hypo and ointment they administered. Master Kenobi had tried telling her not to worry, she could trust them, but this Sufi woman was having none of it. And she was trailed by a scrawny girl child called Gretty, who had a strange force presence and kept running back to Master Kenobi to make sure he was all right. Ahsoka thought that was quite odd. "But I can't really blame her. He looks terrible. They all do." They looked so bad, cut and bruised and seared in many places by blaster fire, that every time her gaze fell on them, she felt her heart bump and her breathing hitch. It brought back memories of how scared she'd been on Meriden when Sky Guy was injured and how afraid he'd been after Master Kenobi's never-explained mission to Zagula. She had to keep reminding herself that the past was the past. She must focus her mind on the present. In the present, Torbell's villagers were scared of her. Before she'd been hustled away by three medics, all to herself, Taria had pulled her aside.
"You're going to make them uncomfortable, Ahsoka. Don't take it personally. These people are culturally unsophisticated." "No kidding. They're looking at me like I might try and eat them or something."
She was doing her best, but it was a little hard not to take it personally, especially since she'd just helped save their lives. "Ahsoka!" Startled, she looked up.
"Yes, Master Kenobi?"
He crooked a finger at her.
"A moment." "Master?" she said, joining him, and flicked a smile at Sky Guy and Taria.
Even though they were hurt and exhausted, they both smiled back, then looked at Master Kenobi.
So did she.
The medics had given him so many chems his eyes had gone blurry.
"Padawan Tano, there's someone I'd like you to meet."
He turned.
"Gretty!"
The skinny girl was sitting beside one of the sick villagers. Hearing her name, she leapt up and came running.
"Teeb?"
"Gretty, this is Ahsoka," Master Kenobi said. "She's one of the people who saved Torbell from the droids."
"Saved?"
The girl pulled a face.
"It's burned down, Torbell is."
"Gretty,"
Master Kenobi flicked the end of her nose with his fingertip.
"Manners? If not for Ahsoka, you'd likely be dead."
The skinny village girl looked her up and down in silence. Then she put her hands on her hips and tipped her head to one side.
"You don't have any hair."
"That's right,"
Ahsoka said warily.
"I'm a Togruta."
"Your skin's a funny color, too."
"Not where I come from."
Now Gretty twisted her fingers in her frayed tunic pockets.
"Is that far away?"
Ahsoka nodded.
"Very far."
"Oh,"
said Gretty and thought about that.
"Can I go there?"
"Well, I suppose so," she said. "If you want."
"Does anyone have hair where you come from, Ahsoka?"
Sky Guy and Taria were trying not to laugh. She shot them a look, then frowned at the skinny girl.
"You know, Gretty, not everybody wants hair. Not everybody needs hair. Not everybody likes hair. I don't..."
"Obi-Wan," said Master Windu, appearing without warning. "I've just..."
And then he stopped because even Master Kenobi was laughing.
"What?"
Gretty stared up at him.
Are you from Togruta too?
No, said Master Windu blankly. Who does this child belong to? She needs to be kept with her family. Master Kenobi sobered. My apologies, Master. Greti, go find your ma'am. I'll see you again later.
Promise?
Said the skinny girl and threw her arms around him. Surprised, Ahsoka watched Master Kenobi pat the girl's back gently. I promise. As the girl scuttled away, taking her strange force presence with her, Master Windu fixed Anakin, Master Kenobi, and Taria with his dark, intense gaze. He'd been so busy being in charge, and they'd been pounced on by the medics so fast, this was the first time he'd spoken to them since the end of the brief, intense firefight. I've just been in communication with Senator Amidala, he said. She's been talking with Queen Jamilia, and they've offered refugee status to the people of Torbel. Anakin sat up.
They have?
If the villagers agree, the Supreme Chancellor has authorized Coruscant Sky to take them from here directly to Naboo. So, who do I speak to? Master Kenobi took a deep breath and pushed to his feet. That would be Rikard, Master. Excuse me. Ahsoka frowned as Master Kenobi walked slowly to the group of sick and injured villagers. Anakin and Taria were frowning too. It wasn't right, Master Kenobi, without his customary confident swagger. Master Windu, said Master Kenobi, returning with another man who was streaked head to toe with dirt. This is Teeb Rikard, head miner and one of Torbel's village speakers. Rikard, this is Master Windu of the Jedi Council. He has a proposition for you, one I think you should strongly consider. Jacqueline, too, if she's feeling better. Master Windu nodded gravely. Teeb Rikard?
Master Windu?
Said the man Rikard. There were tears in his eyes and his voice was unsteady.
Torbel thanks you for what you've done.
I'm sorry it was necessary, said Master Windu. I'm sorry you've lost your home, but we might have found you a new one. Please, Rikard, walk with me. Once Master Windu was out of earshot, Master Kenobi looked at Anakin. Interesting. By any chance did you... No, Anakin said quickly. I don't have a comm link. But I think it's the perfect solution. Don't you? Master Kenobi stared at the ruined village and then at the groups of uninjured villagers at the far end of the square. It could be, yes, he said at last. I hope it is. Then he sighed. I wonder how much longer we'll be stuck here. There's very little I wouldn't give right now for a hot shower and a bed. But Ahsoka could tell it wasn't himself he was worried about. It was Taria. And he was right to be worried. Even full of painkillers, Master Damson felt... wrong. Ahsoka, said Anakin, his tired eyes shadowed with concern. Since we're grounded, why don't you go and find out? She nodded.
Yes, Master. Love to.
Because the sooner we're off this rock, the happier we'll all be. And they did get off it, eventually, once all the farewells were done with. The skinny girl, Greti, clung to Master Kenobi, trying hard not to weep. Her mother did weep, thanking him for saving her hand and her life. The bossy woman, Sufi, hugged him, nearly hard enough to break his ribs. And another woman, in an ancient anti-grav harness, hugged Anakin as hard, and Master Kenobi too. The village speaker, Rikard, was sad to see them go. They were all polite to Taria, but it wasn't the same. Watching, Ahsoka realized that Anakin and Master Kenobi must have done amazing things in Torbel, that they were loved by these odd, unsophisticated villagers. I hope this time Sky Guy tells me properly what happened. Leaving Master Windu and the villagers behind to their discussions and decisions, they flew to Indomitable with Captain Rex and a clone medic for escort. Master Kenobi sat on a portable soft seat with Taria dozing against his shoulder. Standing beside Anakin, Ahsoka stared out of the gunship's rearview port at Lanteeb, falling fast behind them. Lifting his hand, Anakin wriggled his fingers. Goodbye and good riddance, he murmured, which pretty much said it all. 12 hours after boarding Indomitable, having bathed and slept and eaten a decent meal in the first time since, well, it felt like forever, Obi-Wan reported to the Battle Operations Room for a holoconference with Palpatine. Anakin and Taria went with him, Master Windu returned from Lantib to attend, and of course Yularen was there. Not Ahsoka, though. She'd gone back to Lantib with Rex. There was still a deal of work planetside to be done. Catching himself worrying about Greti again, Obi-Wan pulled his focus back where it belonged. Waifs and strays. He was getting as bad as Qui-Gon.
Disappointing that Lok Durd managed to reach General Grievous and escape, the Supreme Chancellor was saying. But all in all, I think it's best we count our blessings. Master Kenobi.
Obi-Wan bowed. Supreme Chancellor?
As the senior Jedi on this mission, you are to be congratulated on its success. And you have my most heartfelt personal gratitude for managing to keep young Anakin in one piece.
He bowed again, acutely aware of Anakin beside him. It was my pleasure, Supreme Chancellor, though this entire mission was very much a joint effort.
It certainly was. And I have expressed my appreciation to the captains of the ships who joined you in your hour of need, Admiral Yularen. Senators Organa and Amidala are certainly to be commended for their ingenuity, but I must say, I am concerned that what they've done here sets a precedent that might in the future represent a threat to the security of the Republic. We do have a grand army, and of course, our splendid Jedi. So I think it's fair to say that this mission was one for the books, and not to be repeated.
I'm pleased to hear you say so, Supreme Chancellor, said Admiral Yularen. I couldn't agree more about the danger it implies.
We'll discuss that further at a later date, Admiral. For now, let us just appreciate the results of a job well done, shall we? Master Windu?
Master Windu's face went still. Supreme Chancellor?
I'd appreciate your immediate return to Kothless. The ruling council has been most understanding, but I prefer not to impose on their good graces any longer.
Obi-Wan felt the Jedi Master's irritation. I'll do that, Supreme Chancellor, Windu said. But with Admiral Yularen's battle group still mopping up on Lantib, perhaps you'd permit me a slight detour via Coruscant.
To bring our triumphant Jedi home? Of course, said Palpatine, broadly smiling. In fact, Master Windu, I believe I insist. Anakin.
Supreme Chancellor, Anakin said, almost wary. But Palpatine had himself in hand.
My dear boy, what can I say but well done, and thank the Force you're all right.
Thank you, Supreme Chancellor.
Now, before we conclude, I have someone with me who'd like a quick word.
A pause, and then Padme's image appeared on the holo display. Feeling Anakin's swift interest, Obi-Wan flicked him a glance. Settle down. Padme was smiling, radiant.
Master Kenobi, it's so good to see you. I understand the people of Tor-Bel have accepted Queen Jamilia's offer to resettle on Naboo.
They have, Senator, and I thank you for arranging it.
It was the least I could do after what they did for you and Anakin. I look forward to hearing the full story upon your return. So does Senator Organa. He asked me to compliment you on yet another remarkable escape.
Obi-Wan nodded. I'll bet he did, he thought, then said, Thank you, Senator, and we look forward to telling you all about the mission when time permits. Which wouldn't be soon if he had it his way. The less time she and Anakin spent together, the better. For all their sakes. Padme was a phenomenally intelligent woman. She knew what he meant.
Yes,
she said after a moment.
Of course.
And on that note, the holoconference ended. Anakin, said Master Windu, Yoda wants you back in the temple, but I'd like you to leave your Padawan down on Lantib to keep an eye on the 500 first. I think you'll agree she can handle herself. Obi-Wan waited for Anakin to object, but instead, he nodded. Yes, Master Windu, I trust her implicitly. As you should, said Windu, briskly pleased. Now, I need to sort out a few things with the Admiral. Don't go far. As Master Windu took Yularen aside, Obi-Wan turned to Tyria. Still got your comlink? Pumped full of chemicals by Indomitable's med droids, she looked almost healthy again. It was a terrible lie. Dressed like him in drab gray fleet overalls, her fabulous hair clean and shining and strictly contained, not a soul looking at her would guess she had only weeks to live. But I'm not going to spoil this. I'm not, she thought. My comlink? She said, raising an eyebrow. Yes, why? Anakin needs to give Ahsoka the good news. She gave Anakin her comlink. Tell her, well done from me. Go green team. She'll understand. Will do, said Anakin, and withdrew to calm Ahsoka. So, Obi-Wan, Tyria said softly and rested her hand on his arm. Are you all right? He was far from all right, and of course Tyria knew that, which was why she'd asked. But there'd be time for debriefings back at the temple, time to think of the fallen and mourn them, and find ways to honor those who'd made mistakes and paid a terrible price to undo them. Time to come to terms with the loss of his friend. It was a journey he'd started in Torbell's sick house, but he still had a long way to go. I'm not even sure it's a journey I can finish. Knowing she'd let him just this once, he lied. Yes, I'm fine. She lifted an eyebrow. You need more rest. After the war. Tyria. Palpatine hadn't acknowledged what she'd done, what she'd sacrificed. It made him angry. You saved so many lives, and now... No regrets, she said under her breath, her fingers tightened on his arm, and she tried to smile. How can there be? Obi-Wan. Then Master Windu returned, and the moment was lost. Right, Windu said as Yularen toggled the bridge and told them he was on his way. I think we're done here. Anakin! Anakin joined them. Master? You've spoken to your Padawan? Yes, Master. Good. Master Windu smiled fiercely. Then let's go. We'll hop a gunship over to Dagger and make best speed for home. Turning, he headed for the hatch, Tyria falling into step beside him. One warm, affectionate glance over her shoulder, and she was gone. Home, said Anakin. That's got a nice ring to it. He was smiling broadly, a hint of mischief in his eyes, and a sense of excitement quickly tamped down. And then, the smile faded. So, Obi-Wan, we've survived another one. Not all of us, Obi-Wan thought. But that wasn't Anakin's problem. With a wrenching effort, he pulled his mind from the pain and loss that were crouched ahead in the shadows, waiting, inescapable. Yes, we did, Anakin, he agreed. By the skin of our teeth. Yeah, Anakin shook his head. You know, I'm starting to think we need a new hobby. He was tired. He was sad, but still. Trust me, Anakin, he said lightly. On that score, you'll get no argument from me. And then they grinned at each other. No need to say more. Kenobi! Master Windu shouted from the corridor. Have you forgotten what best speed means? Oops, said Anakin, and extended his hand with a flourish. After you, Master Kenobi. No, Master Skywalker, he replied. I insist. After you. Side by side, they walked out of the room. This is Jeff Gerner. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars, Clone Wars, Gambit, Siege, by Karen Miller. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Dan Zitt. Star Wars, Clone Wars, Gambit, Siege is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2010. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production Copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.